All right. Good morning, guys. If you have your Bibles, you can go to 1 Samuel 17. 1 Samuel 17. We'll start. I'll get some scriptures here. Brian Mitchell, if you could get 1 Samuel 17, 33 to 37. Lem, 1 Samuel 17, 24 and 25. Sam DeAngelis, 1 Samuel 17, 33. IL, 1 Samuel 17, 34. Ryan Mayotte, 1 Samuel 17, 35. Preston, 1 Samuel 17, 9. Over here. Will, can you get 1 Samuel 17, 36? And then Daniel McCarty, Luke 19, 17. And then Cole, can you get 1 Samuel 21, 8 to 9? And that'll be it for this morning. Okay, I want to look at an issue this morning that is very critical for disciples, and that is the issue of stewardship. The idea of stewardship is how you treat something that doesn't belong to you. Our text, what we find is David, he had an opportunity and his destiny was determined by his experience and his care for something that was entrusted to him. We find very, very common story. You all have read the story of David and Goliath. But before Goliath, there were some sheep that David was in charge of. And the issue of stewardship comes down to how you handle what's been entrusted to you. And in many ways, how you handle stewardship or how you care for something that doesn't belong to you will determine your future and your destiny. So I want to look at a lesson I've entitled Borrowed Sheep out of 1 Samuel 17, 34 to 37. Go ahead and read that.
But David said to Saul, "Your servant has been keeping your father's sheep. When a lion or a bear came and carried off a sheep from the flock, I went after it, struck it, and rescued the sheep from its mouth. When it turned on me, I seized it by its hair, struck it, and killed it. Your servant has killed both the lion and the bear. The uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them, because he has defied the armies of the living God. The Lord who rescued me from the paw of the lion and the paw of the bear will rescue me from the hand of this Philistine." Saul said to David, "Go, and the Lord will be with you."
Okay, let's look at borrowed sheep this morning. First, we need to examine the reality of ministry. The truth about ministry is we will face overwhelming problems in every single arena. Not to depress anybody, but if you've been alive for very long or been in ministry for very long, you've seen this. You'll face problems. What Goliath represented was an impossible problem. And ministry is a lot like Goliath. In ministry, you will face money issues. For most of us, you'll have a need for more of it. You'll face building issues. You'll face people that need a revelation in giving. When you become a working pastor, you'll need favor with your job, with your bosses. You'll face issues with people. People that come into your church, they'll need wisdom and they'll need breakthrough. They'll need to get saved. They'll need to be converted. You'll need supernatural growth. You'll face forces of hell and the enemy will want to stop what God is doing, especially in your ministry. 1 Samuel 17, 24 and 25.
And all the men of Israel, when they saw the man, fled from him and were dreadfully afraid. So the men of Israel said, "Have you seen this man who has come up? Surely he has come to defy Israel. And it shall be that the man who kills him, the king will enrich with great riches, will give him his daughter and give his father's house exemption from taxes in Israel."
What's interesting there is you have the enemy, they're defying God's people. And that's what the enemy does today. That's what hell does today, is defies God's church, discourages men from stepping out and rising up. And what this can lead to, which is what it led to with the children of Israel, with the men of God in this time, was wrong conclusions about ministry. 1 Samuel 17:33.
"Don't be ridiculous," Saul replied. "There's no way you can fight this Philistine and possibly win. You're only a boy, and he's been a man of war since his youth."
I like that. I don't know what translation that is. "Don't be ridiculous." My version is a little bit more mild. It says, "You are not able." This is how we can feel sometimes in ministry. I'm not able. It's not going to work. So what you have, this is the first mistake that's made, or the first conclusion about ministry, is what you have currently is not enough to make a difference. Don't be ridiculous. A mistake that disciples and pastors can make is thinking that before you can do great things for God, you have to first be great. This is King Saul's conclusion. King Saul's looking at David saying, "No, you're not going to go up against the enemy, and you're not going to win." But King Saul wasn't volunteering. Here's a man who the Bible says stood head and shoulders above everybody else. So by nature, he would have been the first candidate to go up against Goliath, but he wouldn't fight for his own people. The second mistake that can be made about ministry is outside circumstances determine victory or defeat. In our text, Saul was looking at outside factors as being the main reason why David would lose. And that can look for different people, but men can look at their age and their experience in ministry and feel doomed because of what you lack. How am I ever going to accomplish anything for God because of these outside factors, factors I can't control? David, the poor kid, he's the runt of the litter. He's the smallest of all of his brothers. He didn't have a choice in that. He didn't wake up one morning and say, "You know, I'd like to be a shrimp." This was just the reality of his life. The third conclusion about ministry is that victory in ministry all depends on me. This is the danger that men can face, especially when trying to do a work for God, is we can feel that it's my talent, it's my ability, it's my intuition, it's my street smarts, that's what's going to determine victory. Or it's the people, it's the city, it's the nation I was born into that causes victory in the ministry. But the reality is, without God, ministry does not work well. First of all, we can approach ministry from the perspective of try harder. If I work a little bit harder, if I outreach a little bit more, if I pray more, if I give more, if I do more, then at some point, ministry is going to work out. You can have different programs. You know, when you become a pastor, you can have different programs for your church. Pastor Greg has made the statement, left-handed Latvian ministries, right? Kids programs, singles programs, youth programs, basket weaving club. All of these different elements, all of these different things, something's going to have to work. Can feel like it's auditorium ambiance. Maybe if we had more smoke machines, different lighting, screens, mood music when people walk in the door, maybe that's what's going to be the difference maker. Professionalism, only the best musicians, only the most talented people will bring victory in the ministry. But the results of ministry without God's help is something can change on the inside of us. First of all, we become frustrated and discouraged. Imagine how difficult of a situation this would have become. Every day, morning and night, Goliath comes out, mocks God's people, and they can do nothing about it. You can be frustrated with your ministry, your area of ministry, your area of influence. You can be frustrated with the people around you. "I'm doing a work from God, but all of these people around me tick me off." You can be frustrated with yourself. Pastor Greg, the first time I heard this statement, he said, "Don't doubt in the dark what God has showed you in the light." Sometimes we can doubt our calling. We can doubt what God has planted us into. Maybe God got it wrong. Maybe God picked the wrong guy. And then you can assume that ministry doesn't work anymore. This is the ultimate conclusion. Ministry just doesn't work. Yeah, pioneering, it used to work, but times are different. It doesn't work anymore. You don't understand how hard it is. You don't understand how difficult these situations are. They're things I used to believe, things I used to hold fast to, but we kind of let them go. And we can think God made a mistake. Maybe I missed God. Maybe I'm not called. Maybe I got caught up in the emotion of it all. Well, yeah, conference, you know, it's an emotional time. As if God's calling on your life would have no emotion. But let's look at the principle of stewardship, because long before David volunteers to go cut Goliath's head off, there was stewardship involved. First of all, we have to understand borrowed sheep. David's attitude for things that don't belong to him. 1 Samuel 17:34.
But David persisted, "I have been taking care of my father's sheep and goats." He said, "When a lion or a bear comes to steal a lamb from the flock."
So here, David points out something interesting. Yeah, I've never faced Goliath, but I have faced something before. See, understand, number one, stewardship is God's idea. First, stewardship means that God has made us managers over his church and over his people. We are not the owners. Have to understand this. And this isn't just a lesson for someday down the road. This is a lesson for today. You are not the owner of your ministry. You're not the owner of the people around you that are serving with you. The truth is, no matter where you are as a disciple, we are all stewards of something God has given us. This can look different for different men, but we are all stewards of a certain portion of money that God has placed into your life. We are all stewards of time. God has given you an allotted amount of time every single day, and that's the same amount for every single man. We all get 24 hours in a day. Oh, well, he just has more time. Oh, he has less time. We all have the same exact amount. And God has made you a steward over that. God has made you a steward over a certain amount of talent and ability. Never mind what you can or can't do. What has God given you? God has made you a steward over certain relationships, how you treat people around you. This could be your spouse. This could be your children, the people you labor with in ministry. You're a steward over them. God has made you a steward over your job. Oh, I hate this job. It's stupid. You're a steward over that. Well, I'm not going to put out a huge amount of effort because someday I'm going to be a preacher and I won't have to work so hard. So all of these are elements of stewardship. Stewardship is also tested when no one is looking. That's a profound thing about our text. David, taking care of his father's sheep in the wilderness. Nobody's watching after him. He's by himself. Much of what David went through with these sheep was complete isolation. No one was looking. So the question is for disciples, do you do right because people are watching? Or you could give a report? Or because it's right? This is David's attitude in stewardship. It doesn't matter if nobody's watching, God is watching. And I'm going to take care of what God has made me a manager over. Third, stewardship reveals what's in our hearts. David cared so much about sheep that he was willing to risk his life to protect and rescue them. Think about that. They weren't even his. They were his dad's. They didn't even belong to him. Do you view ministry the same way? 1 Samuel 17:35.
I went out after it and struck it and delivered the lamb from its mouth. And when it arose against me, I caught it by the beard and struck and killed it.
Well, we have heard this story since we were kids in Sunday school. But this is a wild experience. A lion has a lamb in its mouth. David chased it down, struck it, pulled the lamb out of its mouth before it died. Like, that's insane. What if he tripped? He's running after the lion and he trips and falls and the lion eats him. Like, that was a risk he was willing to take for something that didn't even belong to him. Do you view sheep and people and the labor that you're involved in the same way God views them? The other lesson or the other principle of stewardship beyond just borrowed sheep, but what we see is transferable victories. This is the second principle of stewardship. David applied the early lessons of ministry to what he was facing later on in life. So your area of ministry, it might seem small. It might seem insignificant today. It might seem obscure. Nobody really sees what I'm doing. Nobody really sees the labor I'm involved in. But someday it's going to be more than sheep. David, he was responsible for sheep in one area of his life, but it would later become people's lives. Think about that. 1 Samuel 17:9.
If he was able to fight and kill me, we will become your subjects. If I overcome him and kill him, we will become our subjects and he will serve us.
So now it wasn't just sheep. It wasn't just the backside of the wilderness and David's out by himself playing his harp watching sheep. Now it was like, we could be enslaved again. This people's lives are hanging in the balance. I've used this story before. I can remember when I was a concert director, I had dropped the ball on a very important outreach that Pastor Greg asked me to take care of, which if you're the outreach director, that's kind of your job, is to direct the outreaches and make sure they function correctly. But I thought I knew better. I made my own decision. It didn't work out, timing, planning, whatever. So it didn't seem like a big deal to me at the time. But after a sit-down conversation with Pastor Greg, he said something very profound that has really stuck with me for my entire life. He said, "Stephen, it's planning an outreach today, but someday it will be people's lives." And that was profound for me because I never made the connection. Let's get through this whole concert director thing so I can get on to bigger and better things. But it was connected, and it was important. Someday it's people's lives. So if God helped you in one area of life, that means he can help you in others. This lesson can impact every aspect of your ministry, not just down the road, but today. 1 Samuel 17:36.
Your servant has struck down both lion and bear, and this uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them, since he has defied the armies of the living God.
So David makes the connection. I've been faithful with what God has given me. I've been faithful with the borrowed sheep. And the transferable victories, because God helped deliver those sheep out of the lion and the bear, I've killed the lion and the bear, this Philistine will be like one of them. He's connecting past victories. Maybe I've never fought a giant. Maybe I've never gone out and pioneered. Maybe I've never pastored before. Maybe I've never experienced these certain things, but I can transfer those victories. Maybe I've never prayed for the sick, but I've seen people get saved, so I can lay hands on the sick. Whatever area of ministry, however that works out. You see, fighting giants, it begins first with responding to a need. This would have been pretty glamorous, right? David kills Goliath, holds the head up like Hollywood, whoa, and all the Israelites go and chase the Philistines down. That would have been like an epic moment. Like, wow, imagine what that report sounded like at conference. Yeah, these past 6 months have been great, and I killed Goliath. Those victories are great, and even in my own ministry, I've experienced incredible victories. But you have to respond to the need first. Sometimes ministry is not glamorous. Sometimes you don't have the spotlight on you. Sometimes you don't get the microphone. Sometimes ministry is not exciting. It's just work. It's just labor. I'm sure in the stinking hot sun of the desert of Israel, David is sitting there getting a sunburn, probably not too excited about stinky, smelly sheep. But it's like, that's ministry. Sometimes it's just work, and that's okay. Disciples, are you available and ready to serve only in ministries that you want? Yeah, I'll do that, but, you know, I don't think I want to do that. Can you see areas of need in the church where maybe nobody else sees? Where you would have to meet a need and nobody else would know about, but it would simply have to get done? Are you willing to meet that need? See, watching sheep by himself, that was probably not David's first choice in life. But it led to something incredible. And that's the truth. Everyone wants to kill the giant, but nobody wants to watch after borrowed sheep. So let's look at greater victories. Stewardship leads to greater blessing. Luke 19:17.
Well done, the king said. You are a good servant. You have been faithful to the little I entrusted to you, so you will be governor of 10 cities as your reward.
This is the outflow of stewardship. It's not just transferable victories, but it's greater victories. First of all, this involves blessing in your ministry. Jesus is very clear. When we are faithful with a small amount, then God will bless us with even more. Pastors and disciples, you feel like, I need more converts. We need to see more people come to church. I need breakthrough in finances. I need people to have a revelation. Someday you'll be a pastor and you'll need disciples to catch a revelation of God's purpose for their lives. But Jesus says because of stewardship, that will lead to greater blessing in your ministry. God will cause you to have more influence and more impact. David went from sheep to people, killing lions to killing giants, then eventually becoming king. But it had to start somewhere. It went from his father's sheep to his father's sheep. Think about that. God's people. Now David is helping shepherd the nation of Israel. That's greater blessing. Thirdly, God will bless your future. David would be in the line of Jesus Christ. His obedience to steward the little that was entrusted with him, it impacts our lives today. And your ability this morning to steward what God has given you, it will impact other people down the road. And then finally, stewardship leads to greater victories. Greater giants are still ahead. In your ministry and in your life, God is able to prepare you in obscurity for greater future blessing and victory. Secondly, ministry is progressive. For some of us disciples, God is calling you to do something greater with your life. But it begins here this morning. It begins with stewardship. Yeah, someday things are going to go great for me. Someday I'm going to get that opportunity. But what are you doing today? What is God calling you to this morning? I'm going to be a missionary someday. That's incredible. But what about this morning? What about the stewardship? What about the things that God has entrusted to your life this morning? Then, another thing I want to mention, when I was a disciple, Pastor Greg, he asked me to be a song leader in Prescott, here in Prescott, and it was cover one service for Children's Church Christmas play. Yeah, I can sing a couple songs, whatever. And then he was like, no, I need you to like be the song leader now. And it was like, we're a few weeks away from conference. That terrified me. I was like, no, I don't think I can do that. And he said, I think you can. Anyway, it's about to start, so go get a mic and go do it. I was terrified, shaking like a leaf. I don't know if I can do this. But it's one of the lessons I've learned is like, you know, that was not the most terrifying thing I've ever done in my life. Ministry kind of works like that. You go from terrifying to terrifying until it leads to even more terrifying things. But God equips and God prepares. You might be afraid to step out and step up and do something great for God because it terrifies you. But listen, God has greater things for you. It'll become a greater blessing. Finally, then, stewardship becomes a reference point for all of life. Stewardship doesn't end after you get the title pastor, after you stand on the stage or you do the walk down the aisle during conference. It's not like, all right, I've arrived, I'm king. Stewardship continues, and the stakes just get higher and higher. 1 Samuel 21:8-9.
David said to Ahimelech, "Is there not here on hand a spear or a sword? For I have brought neither my sword nor my weapons with me, because the king's business required haste." So the priest said, "The sword of Goliath the Philistine, whom you killed in the valley of Elah, there it is, wrapped in cloth behind the ephod. If you will take it. For there is no other except that one here." And David said, "There is none like it. Give it to me."
So here, this is an incredible text. David kills a lion and a bear, goes on to kill Goliath, connecting those past victories, yes, reference points. And now later on in life, he has no weapon, he has no sword. But the sword that he used to kill Goliath, that's still available. The point is, God uses past victories as a reference point for future victories. The sword of Goliath in the hands of David again. Why did that happen? Because David was faithful to what God had given him. You will need these victories again. It's encouraging for men who have been in ministry for a long time, your years of faithful service, some serving even in obscurity. It's not wasted. God takes notice, and there are past victories you can draw from. I need a sword again. You have the sword that you killed Goliath with. So what's in your hands right now? That's the point. What's in your care this morning? What are you watching over? What are you a steward of this morning? It doesn't really matter. It's only a little bit of money. It's only a little bit of ministry, a little bit of people. It's important to God. And this is what God has given you. When you care for what God has given you, then He will give you more. That is borrowed sheep. Amen. That's all I have this morning. Well, let's open it up then for some time of questions.
Pastor, what are some things that you have done, like in your life as a pastor now, in the role that you're figuring right now, that has helped you to continue to grow, to have that hunger to grow, and not just kind of feel like I'm in this place? I'm rather growing more from here.
Yeah. Good question. So, for me, part of it is asking questions of my pastor. Pastor Greg, Pastor Jesse, there are issues, circumstances that I will run into as a pastor here that I don't really have an easy answer for. People will ask me questions. It's like, that's a good question. Let me get back to you. And then I'll ask my pastor. I have no idea how to answer this, right? So I'm still trying to gain wisdom, gain understanding. Nobody's arrived yet. And then it's also just in prayer. God, I need you to help equip me for the calling to which you called me. God, you wanted me here. It wasn't just an accident or just a mistake. God, you wanted me here. So I need you to equip me for this time. Help me to grow. Help me to be enlarged. Pastor Greg prays every morning for wisdom. That's my prayer as well. God, I need wisdom. I need wisdom today. I'm going to face issues and problems and circumstances that I do not have an answer for. God, I need you to give me clarity. That's part of growth. And then it's just, there's a important lesson too, just in, I forget the word, but it's like taking stock or evaluating where you're at in life. And, you know, I'm not saying, you know, you got to you beat yourself to death and I'm a worm and I'm never going to be enough. But it's examining and evaluating. It's like, I can grow in this area. I can learn in this area. In ministry, my role in a large way is a lot of the tech side of the church. So I'm constantly evaluating. I'm constantly looking. Our live stream service, how does live stream look? How does it sound? You know, sound at 180, lights, video, camera, everything that's involved with all of that, the website, the app, how can we improve? How can we make it better? So I'm constantly trying to grow and enlarge in that. Sometimes it gets to a certain point where it's like, I don't have the ability. I don't have the time. I don't have the energy to give to this. So I need to delegate. Sometimes God gives wisdom. God raises people up for that too. We've seen the media ministry grow from like 3 people to, I think we have over 30 people now involved. So it's just growing. God is helping us. People are getting involved. But part of that is identifying, God, you need to help me here. You need to bring people to me. God, I need certain ability. I need wisdom in these areas. And God will do it. God will help you grow. I think also trying to keep a humble spirit, you know, nobody's arrived. Nobody's made it. If Pastor Mitchell had to pray every morning and read his Bible, even at the end of his life, he hadn't arrived yet, right? So I think it's keeping that humble heart, and God blesses that. God honors that. Good question. Something else.
You talked about like stewardship over money, relationship, and time. The money and relationship, I could see like on time. Can you speak about that as far as like how to be a good steward of time?
Yeah.
And how could you be, you know, what is that? And then how can you be a good steward?
Yeah. Another way to put it is, you know, time management. As a man, especially in ministry, there will be a lot of things demanding your time. As a pastor, especially a working pastor, when I was in Denver, well, Denver and 29, but my first experience, it's like I have to drive 30 minutes every day, 35. If I'm stuck in traffic in Denver, it's an hour, whatever, hour and a half, stuck in crawling traffic in the morning, crawling traffic at night. I work 8, 9, 10 hours a day, and that I've got to give some time to my family. I've got to give some time to the ministry. Saturdays is only outreach, and then in the evening trying to finish up sermons. So it's like you've got all this pressure on your time, and part of that is you have to be realistic about what you're able to do. It's knowing what to cut out. You know, a good practice is keep just a daily journal. Don't change anything about your schedule or anything you're doing, and just write down throughout the day what you're giving your time to. I spent this much time on this much time on this. And then just evaluate that over a week or a couple of weeks. And then you'll see really quick, it's like, wow, I'm giving a lot of time to the work of the ministry, but I'm really giving very little time to prayer, Bible reading. Or I'm giving a lot of time to prayer and Bible reading, but I'm giving very little free time to my family. I'm not really giving them attention that they need, and my wife is, you know, getting ready to kill me. That's, you've got to take note of that, evaluate that, process it, and say, you know, I can move some things around in my schedule. I can change some things. That's stewardship of time. And if you learn the lesson now when your calendar isn't that full, I mean, obviously you just inherited a very full calendar, but as disciples, when you learn the lesson now, you're able to balance the needs of life and ministry down the road. When you look at a man like Pastor Greg, who is incredibly busy, he's got 4 overseas trips in 1 month. But I know him personally, he still makes time for Lisa. He still makes time for his grandkids. He still puts the energy into that. And I know he's praying and reading his Bible every single day, whatever time zone he's in. So you gotta be analytical of your time. You've got to focus on that and prioritize certain things. And I wish I could tell you what the perfect balance is, but sometimes life and ministry and circumstances will dictate and determine that. But you've got to learn how to steward your time well. Identify time wasters. I mean, it's not very hard at all to spend hours on your phone. Scrolling. I talked about doom scrolling the other night in a sermon. It's like, oh wow, I've doom scrolled for 4 hours. Where did all that time go? You can't get it back. It's like, oh, I'll do better tomorrow. I'll do better today. You can control that today. So anyway, yeah, that's time stewardship. Good question. Somebody else. Yeah, John.
Yeah. So, from your point of being a disciple to actually stepping into the concert director ministry, what was there a defining moment that you could point out and say, you know, it's because I did that that God was able to do this?
Yeah, I don't know if there was like this one grandiose moment. I think kind of like David, it was sort of like the daily small decisions of obedience. It's like, you know, my work schedule or whatever. Oh, I've got to be in to Superior at 6 o'clock in the morning every day, Monday to Friday. So if I can't be in the prayer meeting at 7, I can do something. So I would get up extra early with Pastor Devin, Pastor Tim. We would go to the Starbucks in Safeway in Prescott Valley, like 5 in the morning, 5:30 in the morning. We're like barely awake. We're like, we've got to study. Let's write a sermon. Let's look at the Word of God. So it's like, make those small little decisions that pay big dividends down the road. Small decisions of faithfulness. You know, small decisions of putting away carnality. It's all those little choices, little foxes that can spoil the vine that I'm going to identify. I'm gonna work against those things. So as you make those small decisions, David didn't wake up every day killing lions and bears. That was probably like few and far between that happened. But when the need came, he was ready. So it's diligence. And sometimes it's just doing right when nobody else sees it. I'm just going to go outreach. I'm going to go tell somebody about Jesus, and I'm not going to give a report on Sunday about it. Which that it's valid. It's important. But sometimes as men of God, we need to learn how to do things because they're right, not just because we get attention for it. So that those were all, you know, lessons that I had to learn. And some of them, you have to relearn lessons. It's like, oh, I thought I had this figured out. It's like, oh, here's the sheep again. I've got to take care of what God has given me. And as I said before, the stakes just get higher and higher. For David, it was sheep, then people. Good question. Somebody else. Yeah.
So you mentioned the stewardship is managing what God has given you, or that awareness. In your, I guess, your experience, what have you seen that men struggle with that prevents that awareness or lose that awareness? Maybe they had it at one time, but whether it's things creep in or just losing that side of God has given me this, what are the common things?
I mean, low-hanging fruit is probably pride. I mean, especially when God uses talented men who have ability in whatever arena of life, it's easy to start feeling like, look what I've done. Look what I've built. God needs me to do this, right? We're doing, like ministry becomes us doing God a favor. And that's just wicked pride. So now we're taking credit, right? It was David's brother that accused him of that. I know your heart, right? He's projecting that on him. But I think sometimes, yeah, men, we take credit for what doesn't belong to us. And sometimes we can forget. That could be one reason, I think. It's probably the primary reason. It's just pride. And then it's, what's the old saying? Familiarity breeds contempt. So something that you're familiar with, it's like, it's a common thing. It's no big deal. What's one sheep? Look, that bear is huge. What's one sheep? Dad will understand. Right? But there was something in David's heart that said, no, I'm going to take care of what God has entrusted to me. That was something daily. A lot of the Psalms that we read, scholars believe a lot of it was written by David when he was in the wilderness, when he was in those fields. So it's a profound thing. And then, you know, it's the daily habit of gratitude that protects you from pride. God, thank you for what you allow me to be a part of. God, without you, I am nothing. More than just words, but do we believe that? God, look how great I am, right? It's the same script, you know, one of the scriptures, Herod, they're crying out to him, is a God, the face of a God, whatever. And he's like, yeah, I'm pretty amazing. And then God kills him on the spot. So you don't want that to happen to you. Better approach is gratitude. And then just identifying those areas. Because sometimes we can feel like, I don't have that much, so it's not that important. But it is vitally important. Because it doesn't just stay a small amount. Eventually, God moves and God helps. And there's opportunities. It's like, okay, past victories, I can apply those. Good. David?
This may be connected to this question. How do you evaluate whether you're being a faithful steward?
How do you evaluate? Well, it's honest recognition. And then you can see the pattern of David's life. It's a pattern of growth. It's a pattern of, he wasn't the same man after these experiences, right? And then it's seeing a need, right? David could have kept quiet. When Goliath came out, he's like, okay, bro, here's some cheese. I'm going to go back to dad's house, right? He could have said that, but at a critical moment in his life, he responded, no, I can do something about this. He had a confidence, not because he thought, I'm an incredible guy. This man's defying the armies of the Most High God. I'm going to do something. I can do something because of past victories. So you evaluate it in that way. He identified those areas. No, I've been a faithful steward in these areas, so I'm going to step up. I'm going to do something about this area of life now. I think that's part of it. Honest recognition and then it's stepping out in faith. God will give you opportunities, especially in our church, to step out in faith and do something that terrifies you. Right? See what God will do. Good.
Yeah. If you recognize in your life an area that maybe you're not doing or being a great steward, is that just an intentional choice to say, like, I'm going to be a good steward, or is there more to it?
No, I think if it's an issue of, you know, whatever we listed, you know, all those areas of life, you've got to make the decision. It's like, no, God, I'm going to be faithful in these arenas, right? And it starts with personal revelation and repentance. It's like, no, God, I identify. No, there's certain things in ministry that have I've sort of lost, and they don't really matter as much as they used to. But God, I repent from that. I identify and I recognize that this is something you have entrusted to me, that you've given me. So I'm going to take care of it. And sometimes it's making those decisions in the privacy of your own heart. I don't know how effective it is to make the proclamation to your wife, I am going to spend more time with you, honey. You know, it's like, okay, well, we'll see. Bigger to the point is just do it. Show her that she's more important. If it's issues of money, it's like, I'm going to control my spending. I'm going to download a budgeting app that tracks where your money's going. And then it's like, oh, wow. Didn't know I spent that much on Taco Bell. That's, you know. And now, and then, you know, and I jest, but, you know, you understand the point. It's you make those small decisions of obedience. Course correction. Life is not just a rigid, straight line that never deviates and never moves. Sometimes it's like, whoa, okay, I'm a little imbalanced here. I need to get back on course. That's what I'm preaching on tonight. The idea is the balance of ministry. Okay, it's course correction. It's okay. I need to make these decisions as I'm moving through life. And then when God gives you opportunities, you can look back and say, yes, I can respond. God, I see what you've done behind me. God, you're giving me an opportunity today. So that's how that works. Good. Somebody else. Yeah.
How do you avoid the pride issue in being in ministry and like doing it for the right reasons?
Well, I don't think anybody has completely pure motives in ministry. That's part of our fallen nature. But part of protecting your heart from pride is, number one, an honest recognition of where you come from and who you are, and then also gratitude. It's God, anything I have is a result of your goodness, not my intelligence. Anything that I enjoy in ministry, or any opportunity I have in ministry, is a result of God's goodness and mercy. Because apart from that, we know what we deserve, right? That's one way to protect against pride. And that's part of humility. It's a lowering of self. If we identify and see in our own hearts that inflation is happening, it's like humbling yourself is sometimes doing the right thing when nobody sees. It's like, yeah, I don't care if somebody else gets a credit. I'm just going to do right because it's right. Yeah, so all of those areas help. You know. And for disciples, speak to your pastor about it. Oftentimes, pastor can point out areas of your life that need to change. Yeah, you should work on this. You notice how you're in ministry and everybody hates you? Yeah, you should probably work on that. Yeah, it's, you know, it's identify helpful tips and tricks. But no, that God will help. God will help humble. I think it's part of why David's ministry is so powerful. He kept a right heart. He humbled himself and prayed. God, I need you to help me. I've been taking credit for things that don't belong to me. God, I'm sorry for that. God will help. God will move. Humility is a good thing. Very good. Anybody else? Yeah.
Back to Pastor Greg's quote on planning the outreach. He said, it's planning an outreach today, one day. It'll be people's lives. Mm-hmm. How long did it take you to view it that way?
Well, it was convicting when he said that, but you know, I saw that in Denver when I would call Pastor Greg and he would give me advice, I would carry it out to the letter. It wasn't like, oh, well, he doesn't really understand the dynamics of my city and my church and my people. It's like, Pastor Greg, here's the problem. I don't know what to do. And he would give me the, you know, wisdom. This is how I would approach it, blah, blah, blah. Sometimes it would just be like, I don't know, Stephen. I don't live in your city. You're going to have to find the mind of God for that yourself. And it was like, okay, that brought clarity. I was a little terrified, but it was like, no, I need to press in. One instance I can remember, a guy called me. He was on the verge of divorce. We were in 29. His marriage was blowing up. All of these crazy things. And I'm like, okay, I know I have to judge him, put him out of the church. But how do I do this? How do I salvage this whole situation? Because it was a mess. The whole thing was bad. I called Pastor Greg. It was from my drive from Yucca Valley at the end of the day to 29 Palms. I had 30 minutes to try and help save this guy's life. And I called Pastor Greg, gave me a few just simple words of wisdom that, you know, failure's not final, that this is only a chapter, that God still has a purpose, a destiny for your life. You know, and he said, tell this guy, you know, that there's hope, that this is not the end. And it was like, that's pretty basic. But I'm like, and, you know, I'm in the car. I'm like, okay, I'm going to say exactly what Pastor Greg said. So I called the guy. He's weeping. Life is blowing up around him. And I say what Pastor Greg said. And it was like his whole demeanor changed. His whole life changed. Now, fast forward the tape a little bit. And he's now married, remarried. In the church, they have, I think, two kids. He's an usher, incredibly helpful, an incredible blessing in the church. But it's because it was people's lives. I was able to hear instruction, and I was able to speak it to this guy. That made all the difference. He's telling me these problems, the things that he's done, and I'm like, I didn't know people were capable of that. You know, it's like I'm shocked. But it was being able to receive wisdom and apply wisdom. It's my pastor and God, they're smarter than me. So, but that moment, and it came to light after that whole conversation, I was reminded of being a concert director and Pastor Greg saying that someday it will be people's lives. And I was like, wow, I carried out the instruction that my pastor gave me to give to this guy, and it salvaged his life. So it was like, that was heavy. And that's what ministry is all about. It's people's lives. We're not just doing a job. Oh, I'm just running this and doing this. It's people's lives. You help create an atmosphere where people can have an encounter with the living God. That's a heavy thing. David didn't view them just as sheep. He said, I'm doing the will of my Father. Like, that's a profound thing. So, yeah, that's how it worked out for me. John?
You just said something that kind of clicked. I asked for a defining moment, but it's actually, in your case, and probably every case, would you say it's not defining moment, but defining moments where you take the advice and you apply it to the situation.
Yeah. It's not just a one-time thing. That's why later on in David's life, he had to apply the victory God gave him over Goliath again. I need a sword. What about the victory of the past? Yes, I'm going to use that. It just recently, when I had to preach the healing crusade in Almeria, Spain, talk about terrifying. Like, the day before me and Pastor Greg are supposed to leave, like, Pastor Greg's face is on all the banners and flyers. Like, I'm just going to go and video the crusade. And he's like, I am really sick. I can't go. And I'm like, well, somebody has to, you know. He's like, you're going to go. You're going to preach it. And I was like, I've never done this before. Like, I was terrified. But he said, I believe you're going to do a great job. You will do the crusade just like I would do. I was like, okay, I hope so, you know. But it, because my pastor believed in me, I went on the strength of that. I did not go on the strength of, yeah, I got this. It was like, oh my God, I hope the flight is longer, because I was terrified. But I apply what God taught me through my pastor, and I applied the very same lessons. I listened to the book twice, and I applied those same lessons in that crusade, and God helped us. People got saved and people got healed. So, but again, that was another moment. I fought the lion and the bear. Okay. I'm not super confident here, but my pastor believes in me, so I'm going to do it. And that was just another lesson of life. It's those defining moments, multiple, and it'll happen again. Those terrifying moments will absolutely happen again. So got to trust God. Very good. Any other questions? Amen. All right. Thank you, guys. We're going to have a great service today.